another challenge is trying to articulate to people that are not in the industry why your AI is not working how you think it's going to work.
Yeah.
And you just got to accept it. And then telling them that is kind of like, how do you say, I know I told it to do this, but it doesn't always do that. So you just got to go with it. And they're just like, well, I paid you to build it. I'm like, yeah, but I can't control it. And that's hard articulating that and getting people to understand that too. Welcome to the Binary Views podcast. This podcast is going to give you a dual perspective on startups versus big tech around AI and data analytics. We're going to have collaborative discussions showing you both viewpoints from different topics around this and also bringing in some special guests to contribute to our topics and our discussions. I am Tyler Levin. I'm the solo entrepreneur, and I'll be giving you the entrepreneur view of AI and data analytics. And this is my co-host Pratik.
Hi everyone. I'm a corporate leader in big tech. I've been there for almost a decade of experience in data and analytics. And my vantage point would be from that perspective. We want to bring this podcast to you once a week so that you can tune in every week and understand what is the latest and greatest happening in this area.
Yeah, so we're going to do this in seasons. So this first season is going to be the corporate versus entrepreneur perspectives. There is a lot of different viewpoints when it comes to this, coming from an entrepreneur standpoint, where we're super agile, and corporate, where you got to follow a lot of different rules than we do. So in this first episode, we're going to talk about the future and work within AI. We're going to talk about building AI products, and then also when we implement them, the challenges that we face. And once again, this is going to be personal experience between us two, and then also just the general perspective of the challenges that entrepreneurs and startups will face, and those are going to be different than what corporates face. All right, so the future with AI is kind of it's kind of scary, because like for me being an entrepreneur, I see it quickly, right? Because I'm in AI I was in data analytics. And I was doing Tableau for so long, I wanted to change. And I start seeing, honestly, just like the contacts, like not getting as many leads in. Mm-hmm. And the whole AI, and I was kind of behind. I was probably at least 3-4 months behind. Like, I saw it, but I wasn't really paying that much attention. And then when I did see it, I was like, oh, like, this is about to change everything, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of started adapting and trying to get ahead of it before I became irrelevant, and I felt like it was going to go super quick. And the more I got into it, I was like, man, like, I got to go even faster, because this is going a lot quicker than anybody else is even thinking. Like, no one's ever been paying attention about it. And this is going to be exponentially quicker than like this transition from like non-internet and internet, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because like AI is going to build on itself and make it go faster. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's also scary, because like a lot of people haven't even thought about it. Right. It's like, it's not even a concept. I'm like, your job is probably going to be out in about 2 years, and they don't even know what's coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the future AI is interesting coming from that perspective.
Actually, I'll say, like, I'll pick up on the topic that you had, like, being scared of an AI from being a solopreneur. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, the big tech companies are also scared of AI. Why? Yeah. Because it is the best disruptor in the market right now, and it does not give you time.
Mm-hmm.
For example, previously, if you take a team of 30 engineers to get something done, AI can just do it with, like, 2 people hacking their way through it.
Yeah.
So a company which is big has a lot of engineers to work on,
mm-hmm.
but now 2 engineers can actually just disrupt the whole business that they had.
Yeah.
And that is what scares other corporate leaders in big tech companies.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the view of like the whole ethics of it, right? Like yeah. A lot of people trying to slow it down, like the big thing with Sam, right? They were like, oh, they kicked him out because he's just moving too fast. But if he doesn't move fast, somebody else will. So it's you try to balance that scared of AGI and ethics, but like, oh, if I slow down, my competitors don't, then I'm going to be non-existent. So it's like you almost can't. And so it just, like, it's a fuel to the fire and you just keep going. And that's at the corporate level, right? Yeah, so like picture at the entrepreneur level.
Yeah.
Like it's even worse. It's just like if me as a solo entrepreneur, I don't have to hire 5, 10 people. I can do me and one person could do that and have no cost to it and have everything automated. Like there's no way anybody else can compete with us.
Yeah.
So it's like it's almost a fear of like if I don't, like I'm be gone in a couple of years.
But the reason I disagree with you there is because I understand it employs you with a lot of power to do something that you want to do. But the implicit assumption is that you have good things in your mind.
Yeah.
Let's say if you have nefarious ideas, you can still be a one-man army and can actually disrupt something.
Yeah.
So when some kind of, I would say, technology that can have wide social impact and you just leave it without any regulations, I feel... from a big tech standpoint is that we want to have some regulations to be able to understand, like, hope it should not be used for nefarious purposes. And who is the harbinger or who is the person who is stopping us from doing that?
Yeah. But I mean, we all know the regulations are not going to really stop anybody, right? I mean, as far as business goes, but if you're really going to be using it for bad, like a lot of the open source ones, there's some of them where they're uncensored and you can do whatever you want, right? Like, anybody in any country can go download that and use it. So I think it's one of those things where it's just, it's going to be so hard to control. And it's going to, you can't stop it. There's no stopping it. So it's like embracing it and try to maneuver as you can, but it's going so fast. It's hard to adapt while it's moving so quickly.
I agree in part and disagree in the other part. I'll tell you which I agree on. I agree on the part that within the country, within the confines of the country boundaries, we need to have some kind of AI regulations and then enough openness for people to experiment, right? But where I disagree is that if we have no regulation across the world, this same AI agents can be actually used against your country itself or your company.
Yeah.
And then who is to stop? Who is to get somebody to justice? For example, we know carjacking is not the right thing to do, but we have regulations and everyone knows that if we do that, we're going to be having consequences. Right now, writing a piece of code that can do something where an AI agent is involved. So the blame goes to the AI agent. Like, I didn't do it. I just gave them a direction and that agent did something.
Yeah.
There is where I see some regulations coming in and playing a role of actually being a voice of reason as compared to like the wild, wild west where everyone is allowed to do anything.
Yeah.
And
which,
I just,
which it is currently.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is thing, but all right. So let's kind of jump back into the future of work with it. Like, like this is all stuff where this is people just doing things on their own. Like corporate people know they can't do that because there's consequences. Right. Yeah. So when it comes to work, like, how do you feel this is going to change it from the corporate standpoint of being maybe a software engineer or being someone in data science and data analytics, which everyone's kind of scared because it's like, man, they could write code better than me, right? So how do you feel it affecting that?
Yeah. I'll give you 2 points. Number one is what AI has done is made everyone a good engineer, not the best, but the good, because you have boilerplate codes now to start with. So cold start problem has been solved by AI. So it makes a same engineer 5x more productive. But the implications of it is, previously when you would invest, let's say $1 million into a project and get like 20 SDEs to work on it and reap the results after a year or 6 months, now you don't have to post $1 million. $100K to engineers can easily do that stuff with boilerplate. So what it does, that investment of dollars into AI projects or any project that can be enabled by AI has become more efficient.
Okay.
Thereby, the leaders have to become a lot more conscious about the decisions that they are taking into tech so that they can make sure they can get the best out of it, because you're competing with people outside who have free reins and they can do whatever they want.
So what I would do if I was, so I didn't know Python beforehand. I knew SQL. I knew Tableau is what I came from. I I can understand coding, so I knew I would get it quickly. But my goal was I didn't want to be good at Python, because initially I started just using ChatGPT to write code and then copy and paste in Python and just watching YouTube videos. The thing is, I can get things done. It just took forever because I didn't know the general syntax. I was like, man, why is this not working? It was like, oh, because this had a tab and not a space. Like, you know, just general things that weren't working, right? Yeah. So I ended up going to Udemy and just getting a basic Python course. Just so I know the structure, I know what functions are, like I knew the fundamentals of it. And I still have ChatGPT write all my code, but now when I get errors, I know what to look for and how to manipulate it, right? And I feel like I'm probably just as powerful with my basic skills in ChatGPT than a mid-level software engineer, right? So I view it as I much rather have a bunch of people that know basic Python, lower level, right? And they can use ChatGPT or whatever to do, because it writes really good code. And then all those middle people, I think their jobs are not that valuable anymore, right? Why pay you $100,000 when I could pay this person $60,000 and they can do the same thing you can do? So I think in general, I think AI is going to broaden the gap. Entry and like super, like everybody in the middle is kind of fucked right now, right? Like even in middle classes, like rich people, they know how to, they're gonna know how to use AI, right? But like service people, they're not gonna, like, they're, you know, it's so I think it's just gonna increase the gap a lot.
I mean, it is a scary thought, right? But it is kind of true, and it is coming true day by day. And I'll tell you, like, working at big tech, the engineers we have are all the three segments. Like, we have entry-level engineers, mid-level engineers, and really sophisticated engineers. And what we are seeing is the entry-level engineers becoming the mid-level engineers right off the bat.
Yeah.
It would take years for them to build that muscle, and now they don't have to anymore. And what has done that is actually the market of engineers or software development engineers have become so wide because now there are too many people for the same thing, and everyone can start from scratch. And that is what I think, pointing to the fact that you were saying is, hey, I'm scared, like, what is happening in between? Like, people who are really good engineers, they're going to still be in demand. People who are right off school will be in demand because they are low price. People who are in middle is where we need to be worried about, like, what are going to happen to them? What can they do to be the high level engineer?
Because I think the high level engineers are not even going to do coding. They're probably will set up, like, create tools and stuff for the lower level, like quality checks. Like, they're going to stop coding because it's not going to be worth their time, right?
They actually plan things out, like, hey, if we want to do this, the implications are going to be like that. We need to build things like this.
So those middle, and that's why I found myself in a position once. I was like, man, like, I'm in that middle area. Like, I got to do something different. So that's where I was like, I have to adapt. And if I don't, but that's what, like, I was in the industry already, even being data analytics, like, I was still 5 months late, probably, right? Like, I think officially, like, came out like November, like last November, right? I started dabbling into it in like February. I saw it, but like, I was seeing people like writing poems and just stupid stuff. I was like, oh, that's cool. But like, but then, like, later on, I was like, oh man, this, it could write code. Like, you know, and then even it was like, I screenshot a like an app, and I was like, hey, give me the Python code to write this app. And it was very simple.
That blew my mind too.
You know, I was just like, man, and it just like, and as you learn more, you're just like, man, there's so much stuff this can do. But I talk to people and they have no clue what it even is, you know? And it's just like, man, like, you're going to be left behind. Like, and so that part is scary, because that middle class area is going to be really affected from it, especially if they're not in a tech industry.
Now
coming from the solopreneur standpoint is, I'm in AI and data analytics, so it's not kind of the same as being like a company that does recruiting or a company that does something different, not in the field, right? Like, those companies that are based off of just efficiencies and lower costs and profit, if they're not embracing AI, right, and another company is, they got lower demand. I mean, they have lower costs because they're not selling it. I mean, they don't have any employees. They're more efficient because they're automating things. Like, after a year or two of doing that, like, those other ones that are not embracing it are going to be non-existent, because the other people are going to be so much more efficient and be able to lower their price. Like, there's going to be a huge gap, and there's no way that they're going to be able to keep up with doing things traditionally, right?
If I can just say one line, AI is going to make everyone so efficient. So making everyone efficient means each businesses which leverages AI are going to be efficient, and who do not are going to be less efficient, thereby actually hitting your P&L.
Yeah.
And that P&L is something that everyone wants to have their eyes on.
No. Yeah. And for, like, I had recruiting, because I have a recruiting tool, and like, I was writing people, and one person was like, I'm purposely not using AI. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, all right, like, good luck with that, right? Because it's like, the people that are, like, there's no way you're keeping up, dude. And I get the ethical dilemma of it, but if you're in business, you got to balance it, right? Like, you're not in business for ethics. Like, I get it, you got to be ethical, but if you're in business for ethics, then, like, your business will probably disappear, and then you can go do whatever you're doing with that. Yeah. But, like, you got to be, like, you can't just ignore it. Like, it's not something
I do
you can
think, like, the ethics comes from people, but individually taking a stance on ethics and hurting your business, I think, is not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Ethics and the regulations, I think I would encourage the government to take an action on it and make a leveling field for everyone, because from the example that you just shared, that person would be potentially hurting their chances of getting employed, their chances for feeding their family, right? And there is where I understand where the ethics comes from individually, but it has to be a leveling playing field for everyone to make sure that we all are doing the right things for society.
And I mean, you have an option of how to use it, right? I get there can be unethical ways, but the idea, the concept is not unethical. It's just how people use it, right?
Yeah.
So you just gotta use it in a way that's beneficial, which hopefully your company doesn't beneficial. So it's not even necessarily a, like, I want to get into AI. Like, it's like, if you don't, especially if you don't do it early when everyone else is, your business is just not going to work. Like, it's just, it's one of those, like, I don't think people understand how serious it is. Like, man, like, I literally did this recruiting tool, and that person saved 30-40% of their time.
Wow.
Like, picture how much more things they can do with that time, which will make them outcompete you, you know? Like, like, it's almost a fear thing. Like, dude, you do it or else it's going to be too late, you know?
No, on top of it, it is actually, like, so even in companies, bigger companies where we are trying to recruit people, we are looking for this basic mindset that is growth mindset, where you are open to adapting very quick.
Yeah.
Because the industry we are in is changing, no matter whether you change or not.
Yeah.
So we need people who are in the company to be adapt as fast as possible. And growth mindset are the kind of people who would take it and understand, like, okay, this is what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be afraid of it, but we need to embrace it and then chug along, because maybe in the start you will be not as good, but as you move further, you're going to be better. So we look for that particular trait in people when we are employing, so that they can adapt as fast as possible. And I think that is the crux of the thing that we need to look at.
Okay. So what would you recommend if somebody's in corporate right now and they're trying to stay relevant? What would be, you're saying adaptability is one, showing that you're adaptable. Unfortunately, adaptability is almost a personality trait, right? Like, it's kind of hard to be like, I mean, you can try to be more adaptable, but it's kind of a natural thing or not, right? So maybe like outside of something that is a core personality trait of someone, like, what are some things they can do to make sure they stay relevant?
I would encourage corporate leaders to look at their tool set and understand which are the tool set which they are, or their company is using, is going to be relevant pretty soon.
Okay.
And try to find alternatives for it using AI.
Okay.
Yeah.
So switching up their softwares.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what about, this huge company. So, like, let's say they have Power BI or something, right? Yeah. They have a huge 5-year contract with them. They usually have long contracts.
Yeah.
You can't just, like,
into.
All right, like, but like those contracts are good because you get cheaper prices. But
yes,
dude, like AI is moving quick. Every month, something new is coming out.
Yeah.
5 years from now, like people are not even going to be using dashboards, right? There's probably going to be just voice talking to something. Yes. So it's like, like in those situations where you have, you know, these types of contracts with software companies, you have these tools, all this money invested, everything is around it.
Yeah.
Like, how could you get around that and stay agile at the same time? Because those are all commitments you already done before this whole thing came out.
First of all, I'll say it is hard to do. There is no easy answer to it.
Yeah.
I think one of the answers that I can give from my perspective is actually be agile, open to disruption. For corporate leaders, it's usually uneasy to land into a territory which is unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So not be afraid of it. And on top of it, like, I would sincerely ask them to understand that this is going to fundamentally change things for business, for AI, because in the end, a business leader or corporate leader cares about how much are we able to increase the shareholder value.
Yeah.
And that is directly linked to how much value you create for your customer.
Mm-hmm.
And that is directly linked to how operationally efficient you are from different senses. Now, whatever technology helps you do that, get your weeds wet with it and then see how that pans along. So small micro investments in AI tools to get your feet wet, to understand where the wave is moving towards. And then as you move along over a couple of months, you will understand whether do you want to use it long-term or not. And on the point that you mentioned, Power BI, I would say having long-term contracts, I think may act not in your favor in the long run.
Yeah.
Therefore, so having shorter contracts
and everything.
One-year contracts. Yeah.
So maybe just set up your future for being agile. Like you can't do nothing about the past, but going forward, make sure everything is like 1 year contracts, like you know, clauses to be able to get out, have everything be adaptable, right?
Yes.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about those middle software developers, right? They're the ones that are scared. They're like I don't know what to do. All right. Yeah. Like data analytics people. It's like I was Googling, you know, top 10 industries that AI is going to do. Analytics, software, those are all like on the top.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give them for staying relevant?
Yeah. I would say I'll give them two advices. First, get into the mindset of being a growth-oriented software developer, meaning changes is coming and you have to adapt.
Yeah.
Secondly, if it is making an initial or an entry-level software engineer as a mid-level engineer, how can you leverage AI to become a high-performing software engineer? So using those AI tools in your tool set and then calling it out. Like, hey, for example, the high-level engineers usually would take strategic decisions to make things done. How can you leverage AI to take that strategic decision? In that way, you are going into that high-performing software developer paradigm.
So I'm thinking like, I don't really see the value of becoming a better software engineer, right? Like that, like the coding is getting so good that I think that is not going to matter how good you are. I think it's more of, which I may think you may have hit on a little bit of the other skills, right? Like I said earlier, like I think there's going to be the entry level, which just knows how to use AI.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be the top people that probably were the advanced ones that are now making tools for the entry level or making quality checks for it, like, or creating processes for it. Like I think it's not going to really be a advanced software engineer anymore. The AI is going to be that. And the entry level is going to have to get, you know, like be able to use AI to get there. But then I think everyone else is going to be more like they're going to need different skills than be able to code. Which,
can you give like an example of the different skills that you're talking
about? Yeah, like being able to like strategize and think forward, right? Like being able to lead, like being able to come up with creative idea. Like I think there's they're not going to need to know how to code. They're going to need to know different things to be relevant.
Like, am I reading it right? Like, mid-level software engineers, rather than just coding, half of their skill set should be in communications, could be in selling,
project management, processes, optimizations. Okay. Like I think they need to start thinking that way. Than just to be really, really good at coding, because I feel like that path is the path that AI is going, and, and you got to get away from that. So I would think you don't get better at coding, get some other soft skills to be able to now, you know, manage or do,
like, lead the whole project by yourself.
I don't see the like, that's why I stopped at basics. Like, my plan was I'm going to learn the basics. I don't need to know anything else, because AI is going to do the rest. So if you already know medium, it doesn't really make sense to know advance. It's like, you probably should start diversifying your skill set to do other stuff. Otherwise, you're just going to get replaced. That's kind of how I view it. I mean, what do you think about that?
No, I tend to agree with you on that, because how are you going to differentiate yourself in this market just based on your skills when AI is able to replicate very easily, right?
Yeah.
You want to do, and you want to add skills in your quiver in terms of soft skills that is still AI has not accomplished yet, right?
Yeah.
Project management, yes, AI can do it, but the thought behind it has to come from a human, right? Understanding the high judgment calls, because if I look at an AI, AI is devoid of feelings, right? They are going to optimize for the best vector, right? But a human understands, like, hey, in this scenario, maybe that is not the right thing to do.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the judgment call.
And the judgment call. The so building high judgment call in terms of project management is one way of doing it, because you see the project end to end.
Yeah.
Right. Another way of doing it is just increasing your business acumen.
Like,
which customers are you trying to serve?
Mm-hmm.
What is their need? How are we achieving those needs? What are the different ways of achieving them? And then among those ways, which one is the best?
Yeah.
AI will try to find through data, but like the feelings, the context is missing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so from my viewpoint is if it was me as a entrepreneur, which also kind of like hurts you as a, because the main problem entrepreneurs has is we know a little of everything, and we can do everything, right? And now AI makes that times 10, right? So it's like, I've made this YouTube studio, right? And and it's like I showed someone, I was like, I did this like in 2 days. And they're like, man, you got so many skills, right? I was like, oh, I can do this, I can do that. Like, there's so many things I can do. And so as an entrepreneur, you kind of, like most of us is kind of like, man, we're going to do it all. Like, we have a hard time delegating, right? And with AI now, it's like, we got a tool where we can do it all and do it good, you know? And that kind of is a double-sided sword, because now it's our time, right? So it's kind of hard. But as far as like, I would say a leader in a kind of a smaller company or an entrepreneur is do still know a little of everything. But try to delegate as much as you can, right? Like, like that has always been a hard thing for me, is delegating.
You mean like delegating to AI agents?
You could, or if you have team members that do things, because I have a couple of developers, and I'm constantly like, all right, use AI for this, use AI for this. I did try to make a agents form kind of team. It didn't work out, but it was a good concept. But like, don't get into the trap of oh, now I can do everything great, right? Because then you're going to do everything yourself and you can't really grow. But for a small company, I would say, do try everything. Like, if you're a leader, do little things like Zapier. I knew it was around. I just never really used it, but like, that's a superpower automation, and you can connect it to ChatGPT or OpenAI to do a lot of automation. Like, learn these different tools that are coming out, even if it's just a basic level, learn a little Python on what it's capable of. Right. And then don't necessarily do it yourself, but like, you can delegate these different things to different people. But you just really need to know the fundamentals of it. Like, you don't got to be an expert in anything to be dangerous, right? So so learn what's out there and what's the capabilities. There's crazy stuff that's capable.
I would say like, the big companies come from a slightly different perspective there. And the reasoning is, we have strategic goals that the company wants to achieve. For example, environmental goals, or some human resource related goals, or some strategic industry that we want to play in. When we have to do that, those strategic goals usually get divided among teams, where these teams try to solve an aspect of that strategic goal, right? And therefore, and strategic goals are usually years long.
Yeah.
So adapting within months for those strategic goals right. is not easy, right?
Yeah, like every month we're realigning our strategy. Because I mean, that really, if you feel like that's what you got to do.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
it's like every month check it up. All right, let's switch. Like yeah. I don't, you can't have a 3-year goal anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
and the pitfall is when you have a larger company, right? Being an entrepreneur, it's in your mind. If you pivot, you pivot, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's part of us. We pivot all day, every day.
But when it's a big company, each one of your engineers, program managers, mm-hmm. BIs, or salesperson, they all need to be aligned.
Yeah.
And this information, by the time it reaches to them, like really internalizing what the company is trying to do, takes time
mm-hmm.
because we are still humans,
yeah.
right? But the AI is not. So when it takes few months for everyone to get aligned on a particular goal, by that time, if you just change everything else,
yeah.
again, that process starts.
This podcast is sponsored by Visual Intelligence. They do data analytics and AI solutions. Every season, they create a new webinar and AI tool for that specific season. You can use the link below to check out what those tools are. All right, so let's jump into the next topic. So this is the future of AI as far as work goes, but now what about building the actual products of it? How are you guys building your AI products, and what is kind of the thought process going behind it?
So basically the thought process is, what can we do with AI to provide more value than we currently have? For example, let's say you want to make sure you're selling a product.
Mm-hmm.
And in that product, there are hundreds of reviews, but you can't go through all the reviews altogether, right? It's going to take hours. So AI can help you summarize those reviews and give you the bullet points, mm-hmm. the cliff notes. Like, hey, X percentage of people have said good things about it, X percentage not so good, and these are the top highlights of it. So in that way, this is how we start with our problem statement. Like this, we want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, which AI product can help us do that? That's the next step.
Yeah.
And then the next step after that is, which skills do we need to get this particular skill to get that problem solved?
Yeah. All right. So, but you have to have a leader somewhere in there that's pushing this, right? Like you can't mm-hmm. just, there got to be somebody that is pushing the strategy, that's thinking out the box. There has to be someone in there to do that. Like how, if there is no one in your company doing it, like if you're sitting in your company and you're noticing like no one's doing this initiative, there's mm-hmm. not like there's chief AI people, right? I mean, it's probably the technology people, but what happens if your technology person is not embracing it, or they're not doing what they should be doing, and they're just kind of old school thinking like, no, like I'm just going to do it how it is. Like you being either maybe, you know, middle level or mm-hmm. a manager, like mm-hmm. how can you push the kind of culture in that way?
First of all, I think like for middle managers, you need to identify a champion in a bigger company mm-hmm. because there are a lot of things that a big company from a strategic level is doing. So more often than not, there will be somebody pushing for this.
Yeah.
So first of all, try to identify them. If you're not able to identify them, then try to make a business case for your product, at least that this is the reason I want this mm-hmm. and I want those further investments. That would be the second point. And even if that does not work, just start creating awareness among your people, among your SDEs, to get at least up to speed on this, because there will come a time where even the big techs, even if they're not aware of it and if they're not interested in it, will have to get interested.
Yeah.
And by the time, you want to make sure that you're ready to take on that challenge.
All right. So like for me and being an entrepreneur, I did last year, I tried to work for another company. Didn't work out. I mean, I've been an entrepreneur right out of my MBA. So like, that's all I've known.
I respect
and,
that.
And like trying, I was like, oh, like, let me dabble into it, doing contract. And man, I was fighting tooth and nail with the executive. It was just like, their mentality is just way different, right? It's just like you said, being an entrepreneur, you're just like, man, we're doing what's working. We're doing like, we just have a different concept. Mm-hmm. And it feels like we have almost different motivations than they do. Mm-hmm. And when those motivations don't align, there's just a lot of headbutting, right? Yeah. So for me, it's like if I'm thinking like if I'm middle software engineering, right, I'm coming up with all these cool ideas. If you're an innovative one, at least, like you're coming to all these cool ideas and you're like, man, this could save this time. And then you go to executives and be like, oh, let's do this. And they're like, to me, like, I don't even know if they have the motivation to do it. Like it's kind of a hard thing to balance. So when I feel like you're working for a company, when you're an entrepreneur, you're like, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to see what happens. Right. And cause you don't have to answer nobody. You're just testing everything and seeing what's working or not. And this actually kind of, I had this thought at the last topic we had was being, you know, you have the entrepreneurs, right. Mm-hmm. The small companies and you have the big companies, right. There's a huge gap between the two.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, with the gaps of just social or rich and not rich, I think that gap is going to decrease a lot. Because the big companies, you're going to have to go through 20 different levels of approval to do something.
Yeah.
And everything's going to change by the time you get that approval.
Yep.
Where the entrepreneurs and the small companies just, let's do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that dynamic, which is a dynamic in general, but AI makes that times 10 because it changes so quickly. And if you're like what we said with the planning, right? Like if you're planning for something a year, 2 years from now, even if you're planning something 6 months to 12 months from now, it's too late.
Yeah.
Right. If you're trying to get approval for something in a month, it's too late.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the gap of big companies, just they're so big. They got so many levels, right? Yeah. Of getting approval to do something. Where the small companies just go. They just, I think that gap is going to decrease.
Yeah, I would say the big companies are going to be forced by AI to change their standard operating procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And in that change, the leaders are going to realize this very soon. And I think some of them are already realizing it. And they are empowering those people within the company who understand and adapt to this change.
Yeah.
And there is where I see the big companies are forced. Now the adaptable managers becomes more powerful to take decisions. And thereby, we are trying to be as nimble as possible.
Yeah.
But I do understand as the thing stands right now, there are a lot of red tape that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of it, I also want to make sure that there are big companies in different sectors that does require regulations. For example, if you are in securities, if you are in financial market, if you are in, a drug making company, right? There are regulations that does have red tape and there is a reason for doing that. But where there is comparatively less red tape or approvals needed, those companies need to start working right now.
Yeah.
And identify leaders within the team or within the organization who are adaptable and are coming up with these ideas. As you mentioned, right? There will be some people who will be doing that and empowering them so that they can take decisions on behalf of the company.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you the problem where is in a bigger company, people or the managers, they act as agents for the company to take decisions on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those agents are humans. Their motivations comes from multiple different places, like getting a promotion, getting a particular project done, or just being not as adaptable, right? So those human factors play a role in them making that decisions. But AI doesn't care, right? AI is emotionless, trying to find the most operationally fit. Thereby, humans, we need to get our act together and we need to not get emotionless, but we need to be quicker with our decisions.
And that kind of hits on my point of why I think small entrepreneurs are going to prosper way more than corporate or even middle-sized companies. Because with us, is we have no ego, essentially, when it comes to this, because it's our money. Like we're not like, I'm trying trying to make someone look good. It's like, I'm trying to make more money. It's not a persona that we're trying to do. We're not trying to seem, you know what I mean? Like everything is bottom line for us. So we don't care. Like, it's like, if it quicker, if it's faster, if it's more efficient, it makes me more money, I'm doing it. Where in corporate, that's not always the case. It's like, that could be better, but that doesn't make me look as good. Right. Like, so I feel
even
like that...
personal relationships play a role in sometimes which kind of technology you're choosing versus another.
Right.
And that may be hurting you in the short term.
Yeah.
But you'd be like, yeah, you know, like I know that guy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'll just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's going to make a big difference when building these things. So when I'm building these products, it's very hard because it's you don't know what you don't know until you do it, and you can't control it, right? So, like, I built a tool. It was like a financial analyst, right? And they write code and they write SQL, and it will pull data. And I use the OpenAI's data the OpenAI's assistant API with the data interpreter, and I built it, and it was cool, right? Mm-hmm. And I gave it to the client, and the client was like, "Well, like, why did it answer it this way?" I don't know. Like it just did it. Like, I can't tell it what to do. Like, it just did it that way. Like, when I did it something different. Like, so when building these things, it's super hard to explain to people. Like, it's not like code where it's like, you know exactly what you're going to get. It's not like analytics where you know exactly what KPI is, right? Sometimes, like, I give it metadata and stuff to come up with the calculations, and I'd be like, "Hey, use this calculation." Sometimes they don't use that calculation. It comes up with a calculation of its own. Yeah. And I can't tell the client, like, why did it do that? No clue. I told it what to do and it's not listening to me.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you, man. But it's one of those things where you have to accept it. It's like, it's the technology. That is the part of it. And then how I explain it to them is like, it's almost like you're talking to a person or talking to an employee. It's like, you can tell them one thing. They can still do something else sometimes, right? Yeah, they still make mistakes. Yeah. So if you get out the mindset of this is like a program and it's going to do exactly what I tell it to do, to being like, no, this is just another employee that's going to make mistakes. They're going to do things differently. They're not going to listen to me sometimes.
Yeah.
And utilize it in that way, it will be less frustrating. And you also be able to figure out how to create systems to account for those flaws, just like you would do for an employee, right?
I'll tell you how I try to explain this to my team is that previously, coding or data analytics were more deterministic.
Mm-hmm.
You could determine how the output would look like.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the concept has moved from being deterministic to probabilistic.
Mm-hmm.
And in probability, you'll get the answers you want 80%, for example, the times, but 20% you might get something random, right? And you need to be open to that eventuality.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not, then you're going back to being deterministic.
Yep.
And being deterministic is like the old fashioned now, right?
Yep.
So, one way to guard yourself from that is actually the training data that you are trying to feed in to the model that you are building.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to make it as tuned or customized for your own needs, but you need to be able to understand that there will be a margin of error that can go beyond from 1 to 10% at the least.
Yeah.
And you need to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And it's hard for a lot of people to digest. Like, okay, you're talking about 10% error rate.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, dude, you're getting 90% right on with almost 1/5 of the effort.
Yeah.
So that is something of value.
Yeah. So a good example of something that I came up with.
Yeah.
So doing email marketing, right? Somebody comes in through one of my league magnets, and so the concept I came up with, someone comes through one of my league magnets. On the league magnet, I get their name, their position, their company, their department, right? I'm selling AI solutions, right? So what I was going to build was a tool that just connects to my ConvertKit. And whenever they come in, the AI is going to automatically come up with like the top 5 AI solution ideas for that position, for that company type, and for that industry, right? Yeah. And it's going to automatically just send it and be like, "Hey, welcome to Visual Intelligence, whatever. Here is some top 10 ideas for your industry." Mm. And then shoot that out automatically, right? Like, we'll offer this, and this, right? And let's say I get 100 people, right? And I shoot that offer out. And it's not necessarily like an offer, but it's more like, "Hey, here's some ideas. Let's brainstorm," right? Mm. 10 of those emails might be jacked up, right? Like you said, 10 of them might be jacked up. The other 90 would be good, but it's like, instead of me manually sending 100 of those emails, I'll accept 10 emails being jacked up where I can automate 90 emails, right?
Yeah.
So it's like accepting, like you said, 10% is going to be messed up, but it saves me so much time to not send those other 90s that it's worth those 10% messed ups, right? But being an entrepreneur, I could take that risk.
Yeah.
Corporate can't take that risk,
no.
Right? They'll have lawsuits and stuff. If someone's like, man, like your email had misspellings, it said this unethical thing, and I'm be like, sorry, like you know, but if they do it, you get news releases. It's a whole different thing.
We care a lot about the PR for the company, and rightly so.
Yeah,
because we stand for a brand.
Mm-hmm.
We stand for something where people automatically associate us with something or the other.
Yeah,
and therefore that PR risk is high.
That's why I said. That's why I think this is going to hurt big companies more than, because like entrepreneurs like us, we can be like, we'll take that 10%. I don't care. Right. And you'd be like, no, I'm not going to do that. But we're becoming way more like we're growing now, you know, where you can't, because you got these other considerations that we either ignore, or we just don't care. Or rightly, we're just like,
rightly so. But I would say like the flipping the coin would say that if a normal person mm-hmm. in the US trusts a particular brand, they are more likely to use the products that the brand produces
mm-hmm.
versus a newcomer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I understand there is where the PRS comes from, because people put trust in us by default, right? And therefore they are open to using it. They are open to like spending X percent or X dollars as subscription cost and see how it works, because they know, from this company, I'm going to get something which is going to be authentic.
Yeah.
But with a lot of like new startups, maybe the product might work for a month or two, or mm-hmm. maybe 6 months, and then it may die out.
Yeah.
So a lot of early adopters are really good target audience for like the startups. But when we are addressing a general public
mm-hmm.
with different trust aspects, there is the PR risk comes in. So I would not necessarily think that it will take all the market share, but I do recognize that the startups who are leveraging AI are slowly going to chip away.
The market share from the big companies. For sure,
Unless we adapt faster.
Which is hard with corporate. It's just what it is, right? It's too big, like it's just too slow. And I mean, just think of kind of like back in the day before the internet, right? Like you could move super slow then, right? And nothing would happen. The internet came, it was like, you can move kind of slow, but not. But like now it's like, man, like you said, you got 6 months contracts. Like you got to be able to adapt. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if this is going to be like a shift, kind of like the internet bubble, right? Like you brick and mortar, you got all this cost, like all this, you know, overhead. Mm-hmm. People that went online, like they survived, and like block, you know what I mean? I wonder like how this is going to affect people, and it's going to affect big tech companies too, right?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I think the top 4 or 5 is still going to be, because they're building the AIs, which is smart, right? They're you use my AI, right? Like I'm not competing with you. But the other ones,
actually building the AI.
Exactly. So they're smart in that aspect, right? But it's like the other ones, it's kind of like, all right, you're not building them, so what you doing? Right. All right. So let's talk about challenges. Like what challenges you face when building these products, which are going to be totally different than my challenges.
Yeah. I think there are quite a lot of challenges when it comes to implementing AI in real life.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it is not as sexy as people make it seem to be.
Yeah.
Right. So we start with a false expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about these to the sales or the business development people, it is their job to sell, right? And while selling, they paint a rosy picture.
Yeah.
And in practicality, we try to attain that rosy picture, but it's not always the case. So mm-hmm. that is one challenge, expectation versus what we deliver.
Yeah.
Secondly, with so fast changing of technology in itself, our core, power is our software developers who can make and do great things.
Mm-hmm.
They have to adapt faster. And even in them, they are having doubts like, hey, like, is AI going to replace my job? And that is making them a bit afraid of trying new things. So, you know, making them aware that, hey, you need to adapt, you need to be able to use this and use this for the advent of the company. So that is the second challenge. And the third one, I think you alluded to just a little before, is if there are 100,000 startups trying to do the same thing as a big tech, it's you're fighting against 100,000 armies at once, because they are backed by AI agents, which make them exponentially grow their power in providing the same value. So making yourself relevant in this time and ages is again not easy. And the fourth and the last point I would say is the PR risk. We can adapt faster, we can do a lot of things way better than a lot of people, but there are going to be mistakes along the way. And those mistakes may have high price. And
Even if it's a
it's a
small
manager's
one.
decision that we want to take that high price or not, because it may directly impact my compensation. It may directly impact my position in the company. So these are the four major challenges I see big corporate leaders taking in a big tech.
And for me, like if you're, I mean, if you're already salary, right? So it's kind of like you get your money no matter what. But if you have this risk of I make a decision and even if 1% of that decision, you know, like 1% chance, if that 1% happens, like that could lose me my job, right? That's gonna stop you from making those mistakes, right? Where for me, it's like that 1%, right? It's like, yeah, that 99% made me a lot of money though, right? Like I got one angry customer and I'm not getting a news article about it. You know, I'm be like, sorry, man, like, you know, here goes a gift card or something. And that's not gonna kill me, right? So like my risk is not the same. Like I'll take that risk any day, right? But whereas you's like, yeah, like it may that 99 may make the company a lot of money. It's not gonna make me a lot, 'cause then you got the personal part of it, right? It's like it's not gonna make me a lot of money. I'll lose my job if that happens. Like, no, nope, I'm not taking that risk, right? And so yeah, that mentality
And
is
on top of
completely
it, right?
different.
Like it's you also always think about the company valuation too, right? Like let's say if you are working for a company which is listed in the stock market, right? And if you take a bad decision, and such a pivotal decision that impacts your stock price itself, that is going to make waves within a company. And you're going to be held responsible, like, hey, like, why did you take this decision? And there are going to be a whole litany of questions that you would have to answer, like, there's the reason why, this is the reason why. And then the risk appetite, there is where it becomes smaller, because not everyone would want to take that. Even though sometimes when it goes up, nobody questions it. But because of your decision, if it goes down by even, let's say, 5 or 10%,
Yeah, there's
that's a
so many moving
big
parts.
hit,
Yeah,
and you have to answer.
that's why I wasn't good in corporate. There's just too much to me, it's too much irrelevant moving parts. It's like let's get to the best thing, the best solution, and then you're like, no, maybe let's get to this solution because it's kind of good, but it's safe. Like that part, it just bothers me. It's which is why I became entrepreneur, right? All right. So from my point of view, the challenges is I mean, you're implementing these things. Like I said, I do it for my company, and I'm doing it for other companies, right? Sometimes I get so excited with the new tech, right? And it's like you can do so many powerful, cool things with things, but it's like it's not really practical, right? Like it's like I tried the Aegis Swarm thing, and I was trying to so the what I was trying to do was write I wrote code where it would write functions for my assistant API. And then I use this, it's called Open Interpreter, which is a AI that you, it's so pretty much it allows you to run code on your machine. It can control your machine essentially. So I would have one AI like come up, research with what function I needed. I have another, and then pass it to the other AI, and he would write the code. And then I had a senior developer AI that would review the code. And then I would pass it to another AI, which was the Open Interpreter, which would run the code in my Python locally to see if the code ran successfully.
I see.
And then he would report back to the advanced, and then they would work back together until they got a successful run with no errors. And
That's a
like,
good system, by the way.
I thought so too, right? And I mean, I spent days working on it, and I can get it work sometimes, and sometimes it wouldn't work, right? Like it would almost like because I just wanted to run all the time, and it was like, man, like I it's almost as fast copy and pasting, right? Because of the the input, like you can't predict it all the time, yeah, right? Like yeah. It doesn't always work. So it's like conceptually it's a super cool idea, but it's like I can get to this point, copy and paste, and then like it's the same time as me figuring out why it's not working all the time, right? So so when I'm building things, the taking myself down to be like, man, this is super cool, but I can't really use this in production. Like it's not going to always work. Like trying to take those two things apart is sometimes hard. And so like, but then you got to like really like figure out what is it good for? Right.
Would you like, if I could probe a little bit, if you don't mind me probing a little bit on that particular topic, right. What were you trying to achieve like as your end point? And then, if you have to explain to me like two top problems that you had in achieving those.
Yeah.
The reason I'm asking this question is because I'm trying to understand. I understand the system is very efficient, but where were you trying to hit the roadblocks? Where the roadblocks were?
So give you more information. So with the OpenAI system API, you can give it functions, function calling. Yeah. So for like the financial analysis one, right? So he can pull data from Snowflake. He can use the Google API to pull news articles. He could read the news articles and then summarize them. Like all of those are separate functions, right? Yes. And in Python, you have a specific function to do each one of those. Yeah. So what I was trying to build was an AI that would build those functions for me. And I can just tell it like, hey, build a function to scrape the internet or something, right? Scrape a website, right? Like build that function and test it and make sure it works before you give it to me, right? And so after that, I was going to be like, now think of your own functions and then just give them to me. And then it'd just be like a library of functions I can use. And I could get it to work sometimes. Sometimes it errored out just because it provided an answer in the wrong syntax that it didn't. It wasn't JSON when I told it put in JSON. And then it would just error. And then I got to go see what's going on and then try to fix the error and be like, man, I told you put it in JSON format. and so like, it just, cause it never did exactly, it did it sometimes, but sometimes it didn't. And so like, like trying to get it to do what you want. And it like, sometimes like I get frustrated. I'm like I'll really like write it, but like, I told you to do this. Like I'm talking to somebody and like, why didn't you do it?
So I think one of the things, first of all, we have to be open to the eventualities that the AI may not be able to answer all the questions. I think you know it already, but right? But I also think that as we move along, as month passes by, I'm deliberately not using years because things are changing month over month, right? As the month goes by, I think the AI is going to get more and more crisp and thereby trying to solve the problems that you called as blockers, right? So that is one thing. Secondly, I think we still need to be able to not just use the code that AI gives you as a boilerplate, and you want to put in your mix a little bit, even though if it is adding a new column in a SQL or maybe making a function or updating a function which comes out of it, because that is what makes it yours.
Yeah.
Because just think about a time that you want an AI to build a function for you. And then somebody else in the entire world says that, hey, find me a function like this and just replicate it for me, right? It will just replicate the function that you wanted to use, thereby making too much competition for the same functions that you have. You might be using in different contexts, but if you're using in the same context, it's just competing with each other.
Yeah.
So I believe the AI can take you to a 99% solution, but there has to be 1% mix of your own thing, maybe updating or anything of that flavor, because that gives uniqueness towards it. Because I anticipate 99% of the things are going to be standard these days in terms of coding.
So I'll just kind of play a little devil's advocate to that one. I think for something like this, it's a function is a function. It does it does what it does.
Yeah.
Right? How you use the function is to me what is different. So in the simple example of the financial analyst, right? I have to decide what functions make sense to give to this financialist to perform whatever he wants, right? Like he needs to be able to get the financial data, he needs to be able to connect to this to get industry data, he needs to be able to get news articles, he needs to be able to get knowledge from like I have to come up with what is important for him to get and what functions to give him.
Yeah.
But to actually build the functions, like I don't really need to put my input on how to build those functions. Just give me what I need. Right.
Yeah.
So I think there's the part, and which is what I was saying, like the part of building specific things is going to go away because it's going to be easy. It's how do I strategize and put those things together to make sense or to do something innovative where I think the value is going to come in at. That's where you become valuable. I kind of the saying of like, you know, somebody can have a million ideas is about implementing them, right?
Yeah.
Now implementing them is easy.
Yes.
Like now I feel like ideas is going to be harder.
Ideas going to be hard.
Yeah. And I think coming up with those ideas and figuring out how to do different things are going to be valued more than they were before because now, yeah, we can implement them. I'm going to have Allie. I call my AI Allie. I'm going to have Allie implement it for it. Right. And before it's like, no, like everybody has a million ideas. It's like, well, I don't know the same. It's like ideas are like a butthole or something like that. Right. There's like, but now that's going to be valuable because everyone can implement. Like now we need to come up with ideas that AI is not coming up with. Like that's going to be the value now. And so I think.
And simple answer to getting the most value is getting as close to the need of the customer that you're serving, and you will understand the value.
Yeah. Understanding the kind of, which is as an entrepreneur is the one thing is like, you need to know your target audience, right?
Yeah.
The AI doesn't know it as good as you should know it if you're building a product for them.
Yeah.
So you have to know it very good to be able to tell the AI what to build. And I think that's where the value is you need to be that person. And if you're that person, you're safe. If you're the one building the functions, you're not safe. So that's my viewpoint on actually the challenges of building it. Just kind of recap, you don't know what it's going to do. You have to accept it though. Like you don't know what it's going to do, but it's going to be more efficient. Also there's just the agile of the tech coming out. Like everything's coming out. So there's a million different models coming out constantly with new features. Being able to be test and write your code to be able to like, oh, let's see if Gemini is better than Claude, or let's see this is better than that. Like being able not to be focused on one specific model is also important. Another challenge is trying to articulate to people that are not in the industry why your AI is not working how you think it's going to work.
Yeah.
And you just got to accept it. Like, and then telling them that it's kind of like, how do you say like, yeah, I know I told it to do this, but it doesn't always do that. So you just got to go with it. And they're just like, well, I paid you to build it. But like, yeah, but I can't control it. And that's hard articulating that and getting people to understand that too. As far as your takeaways, what do you think your takeaways for the challenges?
I think my takeaways from the challenges are that it is an unknown field and we should not make decisions very fast. We need to take a step back, understand what the implications are, and then make a decision. That is not to me to say that, hey, you need to wait and then watch, but wait, assess, and then decide. Okay. Secondly, it'll be this revolution is here. AI revolution is here. We have to adapt. So there is no questions about that.
Yeah.
So coming out of the mindset and be a growth mindset person. And the third piece is we all are in this together. Startups, big tech companies, we are all trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So where we can help each other out and make the best use of it, because overall we are making humanity more productive, thereby making a lot of people's life better as you have found it earlier. Yep. So my more intention is basically to make everyone's life better than I had already found it.
Yeah. With the nerves. Oh, you already got some.
Yeah.
No, all right, let's do a big sip and then pour a little more. This podcast is sponsored by Visual Intelligence. Sorry, you know, you're drinking in the middle.
Oh, my bad. Yeah.
All right, good luck on a good season.
Good season, yeah.
Let's get this going.
I feel like this podcast was in the making from past 10 years.
Right.